In our previous episode, as part of our mini-series on translation of holy texts, we spoke with Dr. Alan Christensen, who shared his experience translating the Popol Vuh, an ancient sacred Mayan text. Today, we sit down with two people very closely connected with the modern Maya community in Guatemala to talk about ways the teachings and stories and philosophies of that work still show up in the local culture. One of our guests is a longtime teacher of the Quiché language, and the other is a native Quiché speaker, one of the modern-day Maya. Today on In Good Faith, we're exploring a work of ancient scripture. It's the sacred book of the Maya, specifically Quiché people, called the Popol Vuh. If I'm working on my pronunciation, most English speakers, we'd say Popol Vuh, which, sorry, just sounds like English. And our guests today are going to not only correct our pronunciation, but help us understand a little bit about what is contained within this ancient book of scripture. I'm also with our senior producer, Heather Bigley.
Hello.
In studio is Malcolm Bato. Malcolm, thanks for coming in.
You're welcome.
He's the coordinator of international study programs at BYU and has taught Quiché at BYU for over 15 years with a BA in linguistics and anthropology and a master's in mass communication and media studies from BYU, and he directs a Quiché language program in the summers in Guatemala with Tulane University. So nice to have you.
Thank you.
And next we have Manuela Zep de Oja. Thank you, Manuela, Hello. For coming in. She's a native Quiché from Nahuala, Solola, Guatemala, speaking Quiché, Spanish, and English.
Correct, yes.
And you've said that you might use all three.
Correct.
Thank you so much for being here. Glad to have both of you. Malcolm, how would you describe to someone who's never heard of this book of ancient Maya writing what it is?
Yeah, it is a text that contains the cultural values of a millennial culture that fortunately was saved during the conquest and colonial era. I am not an expert in the Popol Vuh. I am not Maya. I am from Argentina. But as a Latin American, I see that there's a lot of cultural knowledge that has been silenced through the ages. And that I grew up, I did not know about the Popol Vuh until much later in life. And with not just the Popol Vuh, but many other texts and oral history and knowledge and wisdom that comes with indigenous and native cultures of the Americas. And so for me, when I discovered the Popol Vuh, it was a treasure to see how the cultural values are expressed in this text. And then I actually started reading it while I was doing my ethnographic field work in Guatemala in a Quiché-speaking town in the department of Sololá. And I was seeing how the community lived these cultural values that are expressed in this text, right?
Thank you very much. It's really sad that during that colonial era you're discussing, Malcolm, that so many books were destroyed. I don't know if we even know what we lost.
Probably thousands. I mean, from the brief research I've done, you know, this is a culture that had writing for 3,000 years. And the idea that they would just lose all of it because the Spanish wanted to convert people to Catholicism, and this was seen as a threat to that Christian tradition.
Thousands of codices,
yeah.
books that were burnt, right?
And even this one we have because it was hidden.
Yeah, someone brave was able to obtain it and copy it and translate it.
Manuela, do you remember first hearing about what was in the book or hearing stories, or what was your contact with it?
You know, I grew up in Mayan Quiché, so we live these things, and I didn't know it came from a book because I grew up Christian. I grew up in a world like where the indigenous were not well accepted into society. So I didn't know until I believe in high school, 16, 17, as every high school age kid has to read about the history of where we come from. But, you know, at the time, I was like not very proud of being Mayan Quiché. So when I read it, just like any high schooler, looked through it, nice, fun, that's it. And then in college, I had to read it again. At the same time, kind of read it through it, fun, that's it. Until I was 21, I was invited to participate in one of the contests to elect, or to, how do you call it, the Rabin Hao, the daughter of the king. It's a national contest in Coban, where they call all of the princesses from the different towns to come and participate. And they, you know, choose the one who represents the Mayan culture better. At the time when I went there, it was like 85, 86 contestants from all the country. So in Koban, there was a week full of training based on the Popol Vuh, where we supposed to know how to pray to the gods, understand the 4 points that we later going to talk about. That's when I get more knowledge of the Popol Vuh and how we, the Mayan, are supposed to be following this. Even though I was already living it, I was not believing or, you know, basing on all my actions in the Bible of the Mayans.
Malcolm, you mentioned cultural values that show up in here, in this book, that you see played out. I wonder if you would point out just a little bit of what's an example of something like that. Just in preliminary reading, there was a lot of people showing pride, it seems like, and then people sort of bringing them down.
That was
one theme I picked up. Is that consistent?
That is an important cultural value of being humble and connecting with community. And I'm going to speak more from the language side of what I've read in my experience. Mm-hmm. I'm not an expert on the Popol Vuh, but I have read it. I've read parts of it. And together with my wife and Julio Chocol, we teach K'iche at BYU. And so through the process of learning K'iche and reading the Popol Vuh, I've learned a lot of these cultural values that are embedded in the text and through the language. One of them is, for example, in common greetings in K'iche, if it's the morning, you would say Sakarik. And this is a statement. It's not wishing someone good morning, but it's a statement that acknowledges that it has become white the day, right? Mm. I recall very vividly walking through the streets or the paths in Santa Catarina, Ixtahuacán, and saying Sakarik, and everyone would respond back. It's just, you have to respond back. And in that acknowledgement, you are connecting with people and connecting with your environment, right? So you're recognizing we are together and recognizing that it is morning, and we are connected with environment and as people. And you do the same for afternoon greeting, she'ir, or the evening greeting, shoka'ab, which each means she'ir, meaning the sun went. And then the evening greeting, shoka'ab, means the night has entered or the night entered. And so this is an important value, the connection, one, with environment. And we see that in the creation and the beautiful story of the creation and the connection, in even in the terms. So the term in the beginning, the root for the word in the beginning is tikiripal o tiko, which means to plant or to sow. And so this connection to agriculture, to the earth, to the sky, to the environment is really important. It's embedded in the language of the text.
Can I break in here? Because, you know, one of the things we are going to talk about are the hero brothers, the two twin brothers. And when I was reading through their story, it was so fascinating to me how they would speak to the ants, do this, or they would speak to all these different, you know, bring all the food that you eat. They had this connection that we didn't see with other deities that they were interacting with. And so I had that question, is this part of what makes them heroes or exemplars in this culture, that they are able to connect to all the animals, they're able to connect to the flowers and the trees? Is that an important value that we're seeing?
Yes, as you see in my blouse, we represented all the animals. We're part of nature. We believe that we, you know, grew up as corn. If you go to any of the places there, there's corns, there's beans, you walk around, that's like my happy place. So there's like growing up, I grew up in a zoo, according to my kids. So even have some neighbors that I go visit still. We have bunnies, chickens, rabbits, and then there's flowers. That's our main food source. Some people call it weeds. We call it food. It's our comfort food. We rarely ate meat because they are our brothers and sisters. And you know the cycle of life of the chicken or any animal. Even when we're ready to eat them, we ask for forgiveness. Like, thank you for being able to sacrifice for us. So it is part of our culture. Like I said, I grew up living like this without knowing they came from an ancient book. Yeah.
I'm wondering, as I read about this account of the creation, it's interesting that there were like 3 or 4 attempts to create humanity. And first the animals, and they didn't seem to want to talk or to praise the gods. And then they were created out of wood, and they weren't very intelligent, it seems like. And then finally we go through with the creation of, I guess, what we would call us today. And I'm wondering, when you hear that, what seems to be the purpose of creation, Manuela, or of why the gods would create people as you get familiar with this?
To enjoy what they created before, right? To enjoy, like I said, going back to my country, when I think of a happy place, even just here, the nature, animals, mosquitoes, you know, all of this is to enjoy what they created. They knew how amazing was their creation, the animals, the fruits, the sea, everything. So they wanted us to enjoy what they had created for us.
Thank you, and really appreciate it, which it sounds like you do.
Yeah. One thing that Malcolm mentioned earlier is about saying good morning, something that really caught my attention was when the twins went to Xibalba and then how they greeted every single one of the gods. Sakrik, you know, that one, Sakrik, they say good morning to every single one of them. And like Malcolm said, growing up, respect to the elders is very important. Like even now, like here, it's strange to me that we don't say hi to everyone in Walmart. But where I'm from, we had to say good morning, good afternoon. And if there's an elder, even you're 3 or 4 years older than me, I had to step away from your way so you can go by because you're my elder. I'm showing you respect. And my dad used to tell us, you better say hi. I don't want you to bring shame to my family that my kids are not respectful to the elders. So it was very, very important.
Yeah, so it was just built into the culture even. So as you started to study and learn more, I guess you started to see these connections. Oh, this is how I was raised.
Exactly. Everything made sense because I grew up thinking this is too formal, this is too much, so many rules, because I can't talk to Malcolm like as just like my friend, because I know he's older than me. I have to talk to him like they said in the book, Lach. Like here in English is you, but in Spanish they're usted, tú y vos. Like there's 3 levels of respect. Usted is like somebody older, I respect a lot. Tú is like somebody, my acquaintance. And vos, like my sibling. So I grew up like that. And then reading, this is how they treated the people, how they treated the gods. So it made so much sense.
We see the example in the story about 7 macaw, how respect is such an important value. Also the value of humility and not allowing pride, right? And pride does not respect, right? Pride disconnects people with others. And in the story where we have Hunahpu and Xbalamqe that try to defeat this false god that is so prideful, they try once and then 7 macaw tears off the arm and says, you're going to have to come back and get it. I'm going to put it over the fire here. You're going to have to come back and I'm going to defeat you. And what did the hero twins do? They go and they talk with a grandparent, a grandfather, and a grandmother. And that shows the importance of the role of the elderly in this culture, in the K'iche Maya culture, and collaboration. So there's collaboration between generations. It's not just, you know, the strong hero twins that are, you know, virile and ready to fight and use their blowguns to defeat. It's also taking into account the knowledge and experience of the grandparents, the elderly, and respecting them. And together, then they go and they trick 7 macaw and they finally defeat them. So they weren't able to do it the first time. They were able to do it the second time with the collaboration, the acknowledgement of the wisdom of the elderly, the grandmother and the grandfather.
Like one of my favorite passages of the book was the bravery of young blood. How was she rejected by her father, not believing her? First, she starts with like how brave she was. I want to see what's going on with that tree. Yeah. Like I want to try the fruit. And, you know, she gets pregnant and the father doesn't believe her. And he takes her to the gods to be judged, to figure out what to do with her. See, she's rejected from her world, the underworld. And she has to go up to confront her mother-in-law, who also does not believe her. And then she has to be sent out there. You know how Ishmukane tells her, if these are your kids, go and find food for them. It's very humbling talking to the gods. Like, it's my fault. Take all these sins away from me and all of these emotions that she's going through. So in the Mayan culture, women were not very well looked upon. And my dad ended up having 6 girls and 2 boys. A lot of the Mayans were like, oh, kind of like young blood, your kids are going to get pregnant and you're going to bring shame to your house. So my dad told us how we need to be different. We need to be good K'iche Mayans. Like they said about respect and very modest. So it just brings me a lot of sentiment how my dad raised us with the community and his knowledge, his humility to raise 6 daughters to be good Mayans. We all finished college. We all got married. We all have an education. We all like did something different because he said, he didn't say this, but I don't want anyone to treat you like Ishmukane, you know. Yeah. So that's what brought me. Like my dad was a big pillar in who I am and who my kids are, because even now I go down and I show them my aunts. Some of them don't use chairs still. We sit on our knees. Some of them, they, you know, they're this little people. Their houses are small. My kids are 5'2". They're all taller than me. So they're tall people. So I bring them and tell them, look who we are and look where we at. And I tell them, be proud of your Mayan sign. So that just brings me a lot of emotion when I talk about my father. The grandmother, she's just a leader. Like, they talk so much about her. The husband dies early. She's the one that, you know, raised one Hunahpu and seven Hunahpu and their son, and how she just believes in his kids and her kids. She's the one who takes care of the corn, the baby corn that is left there and it dies. She's weeping. She's crying. She's a very strong woman.
Yeah.
And she asks for help. And then is this where she pulls the one thread of silk, corn silk, out? She's supposed to return with a big basket of corn.
Yeah, this is young blood. This is young blood. Yeah.
And her humility to ask for help. She has one ear of corn, which makes it impossible to do her task. But with her humility to ask for help and then pulling just the one silk, and then corn starts growing from it. And she's able to feed her children. And
this prayer, the one that she mentioned, that's my favorite part. How she's like, take away all of these sins from me, all these stains from me. Basically, do whatever you wanted with me, but please help me in my times of sorrow.
Yeah. Yeah, these twins, I was quite struck by a particular phrase. And what I'm worried about is that I'm reading it with a very Western sensibility, and that you might tell me, no, these people don't think that way. But I was particularly struck. We're using this translation by Alan Christensen. And this was when the twins were being disrespected by some of their elders. It said that they were not loved by their grandmother, nor by one Bats and one Choen, nor were they given any food when meals were prepared for them. These others would eat it all before they returned. And here's the line that really struck me. It said, but they did not become enraged or angry. They tolerated it, for they knew their own nature, and this was a light by which they could see. So for me, I had to really pause, and you can tell me how people think about this, but I was really struck that the idea of knowing who you are can be both confidence and humility to know your place, but also to know that you're not better than, but you're also not worse than. And by knowing this, it was a light by which they could see. It sounds like it helped them make better choices, like you just talked about. Is that a type of a light, or is that just me sort of looking at it as a parable?
So these twins are younger, right? I'm the sixth of eight, so I know my place. So when I read this, it's exactly what it is. Okay, maybe they're not right, but they're my older siblings, and they have lived more life than me, so they know better than me. I just have to be quiet and know my place, but also, I'm not going to do that to my little siblings. You know, I can see how they come like, okay, I know who I am, I didn't like that. I'm not going to do that because I know how it feels. So knowing my place, that I'm the sixth of eight, yet know that I can do a little bit more with the structure of the Mayan culture without disrespecting any of my elders.
As I was living in Nahualan, Ixtahuacan, I was noticing a really strong sense of community. And then I was actually reading the Bible, and reading came to the commandment to love God and love your neighbor. And I was just astounded by the term neighbor in Quiche. You talked about, you know, the Western vision, right, of how we see things. And I always thought of the word neighbor, vecino, as a very spatial definition, right, the person next to me. But the term in Quiche is two terms, it's two words, wahil nutzakat. Wahil means my worth, nutzakat means my completeness. And you put them together, and that means your neighbor, the person that you connect with. Not a spatial definition, but a relational definition. That helped me understand what I was seeing in the behavior of the community that I was living in, this connection, right? And so as Etel was talking about knowing your place, I think it's embedded in the culture and the language that we are all connected. And if we are all connected, we know our place, we know how to respect, we know how to help and love others. And it's a process, because we can't do it by ourselves, right? We can't be complete without our neighbor.
Thank you.
It's really beautiful.
I was struck that it was unfortunate that the ball court was right above the underworld, and every time they play a game, it seems to disturb the people in the underworld, who then summon them and like, come on down, we want to have some talk with you. But I wonder if one of you could comment on what this ball court is, what the game is, and what it represents, why it's important in culture. This seemed, Heather, as we were looking through, this struck you several times.
Yes, well, I used to live in Flagstaff, Arizona, and there are a number of ancient sites of people from before the Dina, inhabited that area. And they all have ball courts. And that's like part of the structure, the spatial organization of the community is here is the homes where people live, and this is a gathering place. Oh, and here's this really important ball court. So when I read this, I think this is not just for K'iche and not just for other Indigenous people, but a lot of Indigenous people. This is a really important aspect of the community. And so seeing it show up in sacred scripture, I'm like, huh, because we don't hear about Jacob and Esau playing a game. And I think in Western culture, we tend to think of games as trivial, as something children do. But this seems much more important than maybe we would think of in Western culture.
I'm going to speak just from my personal experience
and
just my personal thoughts. I see in Maya language and culture the importance of duality. And in a game, there is a competition, right? There's two teams.
Yeah.
And that may be a reason why this game is important. We've seen the Popol Vuh, the duality of the underworld and the world above, right? And so there's this constant duality. And so in the world vision, it would make sense to use a game to highlight this duality. That's my opinion. That I no research, nothing. It's just my idea. That's all.
Yeah. Why were they playing on top of the under gods? And I agree with him. And also culturally, like growing up, that's what my brothers did. I have two brothers. And the woman in the Popol Vuh did exactly what I do. Call them for food, bring them their food, and let them play their game. Like he said, it's some a type of competition. Even if you go now visit any small town, there is a rubber ball made out of rubber from a tree. It is the cheapest one you can find. You only find them when they have these big little towns parties. So they still play, even though the kids don't have shoes, they have barely shorts, they still play it because it's just part of duality, getting to know each other, helping each other. I don't remember seeing them fighting or doing anything. So it's part of duality competition. It's just something the boys do growing up. And even older people in Guatemala, there's always basketball courts. You know, there's always basketball courts playing at midnight. It doesn't matter what, it's part of the culture.
So all the way through, it seems like lots of different scriptures have stories about families having trouble working things out, getting along. And this scripture is no exception. So what does it teach you about the proper way to do things? You've talked about the respect to the elders and the knowledge that they might have. Are there other things that we learn about how to conduct ourselves that you get from this?
So we grew up Christian. There's people who still practice the Mayan 100%. And there's the Catholics and there's us. We're no Catholics or Mayans. So there's the name written here about the Kamatlbe. Kamatlbe, the person that takes the road, the ones that guides the road. And my dad was one of them without being named Kamatlbe, because then the Catholics will go like, why? He's not Catholic. But he'll be the one bring in couples, families, kids who are not behaving, and ask them, kind of like a psychologist work nowadays, what happened? Why is this? And then there's the two sides, the family or the people who are offended, or if in a marriage, both families, what do you think about this? And he was the one, the mediator. And so we solve all of that, all the problems in my family like that. In that case, it was my dad. Or my dad said, if you don't feel comfortable with me, we can go to a different Kamatlbe, and he can mediate between you to see how we can get this to a solution.
In the creation, you see that they counsel together. And I noticed that in the communities that I've lived in Guatemala, that people counsel, that's an important value. And a way of life is counseling together.
And you just wait for it. Because my dad said, we're going to talk about tonight. And you're just like, you can get mad 30 minutes before, but in the moment of counseling, leave all your emotions and talk rationally because we need to get to a solution. So I love that. But like reading the Popol Vuh, I'm like, oh my goodness, I had no idea. My dad have read the Popol Vuh.
You know what's interesting to me about these other stories? So we have like Cain and Abel or Jacob and Esau. If you turn to the Book of Mormon, you have Nephi and his brothers. In the Bhagavad Gita, you have all these cousins who are warring. These two twin brothers actually act as one. And they're sort of a united front against the rest of the family, whether it's their grandmother or their older brothers, or against the deity of the underworld, right? So that's actually a marked difference because these other sacred texts are like, you have a brother and he's trying to kill you. And this is more like you have a brother and he's your best friend and you guys are in lockstep. You're surviving together. So I think that's an interesting difference. But it's just so interesting to me that when we look at sacred texts, they really are about people and they're about the experiences that we're having in our daily lives. I don't think we're supposed to say, oh, that happened long ago and I don't really have any connection to it. I think we are supposed to look at those texts and say, okay, how did they solve that problem? What did they feel? Okay, they didn't do that right. You should not be selling your brother into slavery. Okay, noted. But there is, I don't know, something reassuring for me that the scriptures are not populated with perfect people.
I agree, because, you know, later in the book, they get rid of their older siblings.
Yeah.
You know, and because they have a mission. They know who they are. They know their place in that time of life, and they knew what they need to accomplish that we could be here.
Yeah.
Manuela, as you became more aware, did you see people who were practicing the tradition from the Popol Vuh just in their everyday life? What is the worship like, or what are the traditions?
So yeah, growing up, I'm not, like, I was born in 1984. I'm not sure what part of the whole history of the Mayans were there, but I remember it still was kind of prohibited. Mm. So they will have their ceremonies in caves. And I remember as a kid, everybody knew we're going to have the caves because it was so fun to see. As you see here, he talks about the different colors of petals, and they have the candles, the different colors of the candles, the beheading of animals. I remember, you know, kind of like, where is this happening? I'm going to go to this cave. I will tell my mom, it's time for me to go get some ach, which is like baby corn. Not baby corn, but young corn. So it was around October, September, it was time to get baby corn to put in our soups. So I'm like, it's my turn to go because I knew there's going to be a ceremony in a cave. And I'll go and check because it was so intriguing to me. The fire that now I see where it come from, fire they needed to burn the beheaded chicken because of the soul of young blood, and the candles, which represents the flowers that they're giving to the gods to peace them. And I remember they would be praying, you know, Rukushkach, the four crosses that they talk about. So I saw this growing up. I think now it's more common to see it. It's more because there's more tourists interested in the Popol Vuh. And that was the thing that my dad used to say, if you're going to be Mayan, you have to represent it correctly. You're not going to monetize from it. You're not going to be a bad example of a Mayan. You're not going to try to get just fame for this, but you believe and show yourself as a real good Mayan.
And Malcolm, as you return every summer with the language program, do you see that there are people practicing?
Yes, yeah, yeah. And as Manuela had mentioned, in everyday life, I think that's an important thing to recognize. And simple things like eating, right? The preparing food, maize is a sacred part of life. The word to eat, wa'ik, is based on the word for corn, right? And so you're not eating if you don't have some type of corn in your meal. And the process for making it is somewhat sacred, and you're not supposed to be speaking and telling jokes while you're eating your tortilla, your lej, your tamalito, your soup. You have to take that as a sacred part of who you are because you are created from maize. And so I've seen that. There are ceremonies that are very important and specific days. The Maya culture has maintained a very complex calendric system, and there are achich, or day keepers, that are the responsible people that guide the community with regards to keeping track of the calendar, what is appropriate for each day, and there are ceremonies that go with that. And sacred space is an important part of the culture. And so, as Manuela was mentioning, you know, caves are sacred places. Other mountains.
High in the mountains.
Yep.
Yeah.
Mountains. These are important things that happen that through the years may have been silenced or hidden. And today, there's more protection for that. One of the ways that it has maybe sustained its existence is through syncretism. And so a combination of Catholicism with Maya cosmology and the things that, you know, they just combine into what is today. I think an important part also of Maya culture is how knowledge and wisdom is perceived. And this is something that I learned by studying the language. In English, like in English or Spanish, we have two terms, knowledge and wisdom. And there are certain, you know, information embedded in these two terms. In K'iche, the word for knowledge, the root is etach, which means to measure. And so it's based on this kind of measuring things, and you know things by studying them and measuring, observing them. And then the word for wisdom is na'och, or nochibar, which the root is na, and it means to feel. And embedded in that word is the experience, the emotional experience. And so when you talk to somebody in Nahuala or Ixtahuacan, Quiche speaking community, and they tell you, utz una och, you're saying, oh, this is a good person. His knowledge is good. His feeling of life is good. His behavior is good. Or na utzta, una och, right?
Or not, right?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And so just the way that knowledge is gained in a Quiche-speaking community, just with those two terms, gives us some insight on how life is perceived, too, and what's important. And for me, I've noticed, and I'm grateful for the opportunity to learn Quiche because I am now able to understand, or maybe for me, I've chosen to value the importance of feeling and as a human experience, as a connection with others. That is what gives me wisdom, right? Nochibal and naoch. Etamabal, or the measuring, that's good also. But what I find in learning Quiche is that naoch, the feeling part of learning, is really important in this life experience, this moral experience.
We sort of started earlier by saying, here are two people who know three different languages, which to me says you know three different ways of approaching the world, right? And that seems to be the importance of teaching people Quiche at a Western university, is you're not just teaching them, here are the nouns and the pronouns and the and everything else. You're teaching them, here's a way to approach creation. Here's a way to approach divinity.
I help coordinate study abroad programs as my full-time employment here at BYU. And I go to preparatory classes, students that are preparing to travel abroad. And something that I love sharing is that the opportunity to learn a new language, a new culture, offers us a fountain of inspiration because we're tapping into a new way of seeing how the principles that bring joy to life, right, in a different language, in a different culture. And we can tap into that and brings us richer understanding of our life here on Earth.
I am so sorry about how much was lost. That we talked about, the codices and other books.
Yet, after hundreds of years, these values are embedded in the culture. It's incredible.
It's still there.
We have to recognize the richness, but also the effort of the Quiche and the Maya in today's world to maintain these values in their daily life, even though so much of it was destroyed and stripped away and silenced.
And it sounds like rather than being oppressed and literally underground, going to caves for the ceremonies, that people can be more proud today of their heritage. That's
correct.
What I hear from you, Manuela.
Yes, absolutely. In fact, in schools now, even in the city, they're asking them to learn Mayan language.
So here we are in the U.S., and we have this Quiche program here at BYU. How many people study, and what is the motivation to study and to learn this?
Yeah. BYU does have several students that take the class. The demographics are linguistic students, anthropology students, heritage students, so Guatemaltecos, that want to connect with their heritage, their family. And that has really strengthened the Quiche community here in Utah. It has really strengthened our community. My wife is from Quetzaltenango, Guatemala, and together with Manuela, her cousin, Julio, there's a large Quiche community here in Utah and in other parts of the United States. And here in Utah, we get together and we have a language nest, very similar to what the Hawaiian language revitalization movement did. And so we know that it's important for our kids to also connect with their family in Guatemala, with their history, with their ancestry, with these values. And so in this language nest, we teach Quiche. We also have activities and songs, not only history. In fact, it may be perceived by many just as something of the past, but the Popol Vuh is very present today. And the Maya people are here, not just in Guatemala, but here in the United States, in Mexico, everywhere. And I think that's an important thing to remember.
You were mentioning earlier, how is it that we're still living this because we keep eating corn? Like, honestly, like, I try, it's hard. I have a hard time eating Mexican tortillas. I have to make my own tortillas by hand. It just cannot, my body cannot process something processed. So on Sundays, I make my own tortillas. I have my own comal griddle, but from Guatemala. But I make my, I don't know, 30, 40 tortillas on Sunday and freeze them. And every day, that's what I eat. Eggs
and
with tortillas.
Corn tortillas.
Corn tortillas made by hand. egg with tortillas. Lunch, my kids now know it. Can I have toast, avocado toast, but with tortillas? Mm-hmm. So I truly believe that's what keeps, because in my, it brings equilibrium in my body. It brings peace. Like my siblings joke about how, like, we gotta eat pizza with tortillas. Otherwise, we're not true Mayans. So sometimes a banana with a tortilla or something, but tortillas or soup and the little tamales, just the tamales, nothing in it, is also something that we always make. Well, that's why we keep giving.
That's a beautiful way that you're continuing that, and with your children now. That's important for them as well.
So the corn keep going into their veins. I remember who they are. I was going to mention this funny, it's no funny story, but it makes me think of it. So Manuela, like in the Mayan culture, we are named after our grandfathers. Hmm. So Manuela is the name of my grandmother. I am the only Manuela in the family. But when I was, again, I'm the sixth of eight. We finish junior high in our town, but there's no high school. So my dad will be sending us to the city to finish high school with some family friends that he knew. Anyway, when it was time for me to leave, I was 14 years old, she told me, don't go. You are Manuela. You're my blood. Stay here. And I'm like, I gotta go. That my dad is my dad. He knows better. I'll find you a husband. He will be really good, you know, with corn and land, somebody who can work with their hands. You don't have to, you know how to cook, you know how to sew things. You're going to be a great wife. And I'm like, that sounds fun, but my dad said, I have to go. So then she told me, make sure that you don't forget who you are. Make sure that you pass it to your kids. And the one thing that I didn't do was like, do not mix your blood. Make sure your blood is stay pure. And now I'm like, okay, grandma. And then she died a year after that. But now going back, I think about it, I'm like, oh my goodness. One day my little kid, he's 6 years old. And the teacher says, and the Mayas are extinct. And my kid knows that he's a half Mayan. And he's like, no, I am half a Mayan. And the kids are like, no, you are not. They were ancient people and they talk about it. And then the teacher comes to me and it's like, is it true? I don't want to offend. I don't want to just, it just caused a really big commotion in the class. And I said, yeah, he's right. He's a half Mayan. So I came and then the next day he came, mom, so if I married someone who is no Mayan, my Mayanness is going to be thinning out. So I'm like, no, if you keep eating corn tortillas, you're going to be keep being Mayan.
Keep it going.
Yep. Exactly. Continue the traditions.
This has been delightful to learn. We're just scratching the surface of what we can learn from this. But I wonder if there's anything else you want to say or want to share about Popol Vuh or Mayan culture.
One thing that I would like to say is the importance of reading texts and reading the Popol Vuh as a sacred text and allowing it to inspire us and encourage us. Again, from my language learning experience, the verb to read involves the verb to call. So you say, when I read a book, kinsikich uwach lewuh, I call out the face of the book. And to me, that's a very wonderful way of how I need to read things. It also probably expresses how reading was done as a ceremonial ritual experience where it wasn't like we read today, sitting down silently, you know, and reading. It was a ritual type of experience. And that helps me engage differently with texts and say, okay, I need to call out the words from this page and how that applies to my life and what's important and what will bless me and benefit me and my family, my community. And I think we can do that in the Popol Vuh. There's so many lessons that are beneficial to us and to our community.
Thank you.
One thing I just want to mention, there's a story that we celebrate, the person that we celebrate on February 20th in Guatemala, Tikkun Umang. There's a song, there's poems all about him. And I always wonder, what does it come from? So I found it in the Popol Vuh, or I think that I found it. So the story that I know growing up, Tikkun Umang was a national hero, was a prince that he fought, Pedro de Alvarado. But instead of killing him, he killed the horse. And then Pedro de Alvarado killed him. And then he died, and the Quetzal, the national bird, landed in his chest, and that's why the Quetzal has his red belly. That was the story I heard. And now I'm reading about him and how he was the ninth generation of Quiché's gods, and he was one of the rebellious Quiché's who tried to fight the Spanish people, and they killed like 10 Spaniards around it, and then, of course, he was killed later. But that's where it comes from. He truly is our hero. So I'm just like, oh my goodness. And they believe that he died February 22nd. That's why we celebrate February 20th. Anyway, I just thought it was amazing how, like I said, there's so many things that I grew up living with and I'm finding it here. Like the name of Chelahu, Quetzaltenango, the name of, you know, Nahuatl, where it comes from, because where I'm from is Nahuala, which is, we used to say, is the spirit of the water, because there's a river that goes around our town. And Nahual is like your spirit. And like everybody will ask me, what's your Nahual? Like, you know, what's your Nahual? If you're a dog or you're a monkey, that's your kind of your personality. So it was just very interesting getting to know better where I'm from and why I behave the way I behave.
Thank you both for being here. Malcolm Botto, who coordinates international study programs at BYU and teaches summers K'iche in Guatemala. Also, Manuela Zep de Oja. Thank you both for being here today.